And we now welcome Barbara Davidson, who is going to give us an update on the investor liaison strategy. And I think the obviously we have the papers in our packs, and also the investor group this morning had a little bit of a preview and a discussion. So, Barbara,
that's how it works. Yeah. Thank you, Joanna. Good morning, everyone. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Barbara Davidson. I head up the investment community engagement at the ISB. So I'm tasked to make sure that we reach out and speak to investors on our projects and that we're talking to the right people and making sure their views are heard. And in February, I came to the Advisory Council and presented, Allison Thomas and I presented a paper on the work we're doing to review the investment engagement strategy at the ISB. And what I wanted to do today was give you an update on the strategy review, what we decided, which I think some of it may be repeats from what you heard in February, but I think it's worthwhile kind of reminding you what we're doing and also for the new council members. And I also at the end of this, the end of my presentation or my summary, I wanted to also ask the Advisory Council if there are any other comments on the things we're doing or any questions on our activities, and we can hopefully continue to get your input on this in the main session as well as at the investor subcommittee session. So what we've been doing is trying to increase the effectiveness and efficiency of our interaction with the investment community, because over time we found that while we are writing the standards for the investment community, we don't have a lot of input from the investment community for various reasons. It could be they don't have the time, they don't know that we would like their input, they're not comfortable speaking about accounting issues with us, there could be concerns about conflicts of interest. And so even if they do want to speak to us, they don't want the information attributed to them, so they might not send in comment letters. And so there are a lot of reasons why we don't have interaction with the community as much as we would like to. And we've also found, or at least when I took on this role, that while we had a lot of contacts, we were doing a lot of outreach very ad hoc. So we didn't have any real structure to our outreach. We were speaking to whoever would speak to us. So we took a step back at the beginning of this year and tried to think about how to better structure our interaction with the investment community. And we've come up with what we're calling a three-pronged approach, which so that we base that on the resources that we have at the ISB and ways we think are the best way of talking to investors that are, best way of reaching out to investors and looking at how to leverage our resources the best way. So we have, in this three-pronged approach, we're calling it three different levels. The first is a direct relationship program with investors. The second is what we're calling one-to-many program. And the third is a trusted party channel. These are terminology we came up with. In the direct relationship program, we're trying to make sure that, what we're doing is trying to build one-on-one relationships with investors, make sure that we have an ongoing dialogue with some of the biggest users of I4S financial statements, because obviously they're our primary stakeholders if they're significant users of the financial statements. We also want to speak to their advisors or managers. So when we speak to the biggest users, we're referring to the buy side, asset owners or asset managers. But we also want to speak to the sell side, so their advisors. And then we also have found that even if there are some organizations that aren't very large, say, looking at their assets under management, or maybe they're not advisors, they also are quite vocal in the reporting debate. And so we want to make sure we target them as well. So our direct relationship program is looking at these types of organizations and looking at ways of developing a dialogue with them on a one-to-one basis, meaning that we will contact them directly, try to develop a relationship between some of their senior management and our board members, try to get their input on our standards, so on our projects, and speak to them directly on the projects as well. These are things we're doing anyway, but again, like I said in the beginning, we're just trying to make this more structured, and we're trying to make sure that we're talking to the main users of financial statements, so that we're looking at some of the bigger organizations that are using I4S accounts. I've explained in the paper how we've started to identify these types of organizations. I mean, we were using as a proxy assets under management, a non-equity assets under management, just to start this process and we are also obviously looking at other ways. If we are hearing from people that there are other investor organizations that are quite vocal or other people we should be speaking to, we're not going to use assets under management as the only proxy. But that's the way we've kind of started this process. And then we look to see if we know people there already or if we have contacts at those organizations. So it's just very kind of mechanical what we're doing to develop these relationships. We're also, as part of this, the ISB has developed these regional stakeholder committee, regional stakeholder committees. And so those are, there's North America, there's Asia Oceania, there's Europe, there's South Africa. And so what I'm also doing is I'm going to each of those meetings, talking to those committees as well about whether there are any specific issues in those regions that we should be aware of for the investor side, whether we should be targeting any specific investor organizations in those regions, and then deciding how we should move forward with that. So whether those are organizations that the committee should try to take ownership of speaking to, or whether I should go out as part of my own direct program and speak to them. So it's all the same goal, but we're trying to kind of reach out in different ways and make sure that we're speaking to the right organizations and that we're aware of issues at regional levels as well as our whole global strategy. So this is what we're calling our direct relationship program. As we realize there are a lot of people obviously to speak to, we know we have to leverage our resources in different ways. So our second piece is called a one-to-many program. And this is, again, because normally we ask people to reach out to us through the website, through comment letters, and that's a way that we get a lot of feedback into our projects while, you know, using our resources minimally, but investors don't tend to do that, like I mentioned. So we're going to reach out to investors in different ways, trying to increase our visibility through things like we've been writing an investor newsletter, so we've written two so far, and those are kind of a one-stop shop for investors to understand what the ISB is doing, some of the big conferences we have, the projects we're looking for, outreach, feedback on, anything else that's going on in the pipeline. We're sending out this investor newsletter probably once a quarter and hoping to reach out to the community in that way. We're also doing a lot, we're trying to create a lot more investor education materials, so we're doing webcasts in conjunction with the CFA Institute. Pat Finnegan's doing a lot of those with Vincent, and also our investor education manager, Fred Nieto. So they're going out and doing these 20-minute webcasts and putting them on the website to discuss new standards or existing standards and things that investors or analysts would be interested in understanding about those projects. And we're doing other kind of social media things, such as we've opened up a Twitter account for, I always use the wrong terminology, we're twitting or tweeting things, the articles that we think are interesting to investors. So we have our own investors and I4S Twitter account that we're trying to also engage the investment community through the use of, the use of our webpage and the use of media rather than just going on one-to-one direct all the time. And we found that this has been, it's been reasonably productive so far, I think. The newsletter has been interesting because we have had some positive feedback from investors that we've been trying to speak to. Have actually contacted us as a result of the newsletter, which I was very happy about. And then we've also had others who aren't investors contact us about the newsletter and say that they appreciated the content. So that's been very positive, as well as the other things like the education materials are very, so far they've had a good reaction. And this third approach we're calling a trusted third-party channel, is trying to make sure we're also better leveraging other organizations and the outreach they do with their investment community. And so we're going to try to attend some, say, more investor analyst conferences in the future. We work with EFRAG quite a bit, actually, in Europe on outreaching. Either EFRAG will set up they'll outreach the investor community, and we will try to attend those meetings, or they'll feedback to us the information that they've heard. And so we haven't started this channel that much yet, but I think once we figure out a process for doing this type of thing, and if we can make sure we're doing it the right way to get the input the most effectively, it could be a quite good channel to use other resources to kind of feedback into us on the investor outreach. So those are the three parts that we've been working on for the investor strategy. The other piece that I've put in to this paper is what I've called a value proposition, which is, It's kind of, to me, part of the direct relationship program. So this is all lingo, but basically what it's doing is when we're reaching out to investors or investor organizations on a one-to-one basis and trying to develop our relationship, we understand that, you know, we can't always be asking for input all the time and their time without trying to give something back to the community. And so we're basically just packaging what we can do for investors when we go out to meet with them and offering some of the things the ISB can do for them as well as what we want from the investment community. So this is, to me, this is a piece of the one-on-one or one-to-one or direct relationship program. So again, this is going out to the investment community, trying to develop a better dialogue with the executives there, so the on the investment side, so the CIOs, the directors of research, organizing meetings with our board members, to talk to them about any issues that are concerning them that aren't necessarily accounting issues, they can be more political-based issues, but wanting them to understand that we are we're open to having conversations about things that might concern them. One of the things that this does, I think, for us is there have been issues in some regions that we've been approached by some investor stakeholders that have been concerned about certain things. I think we might have mentioned this to the Advisory Council in the past. For example, in the UK, there's a group that's concerned about prudence and stewardship. And without a one-to-one relationship with a lot of the investment organizations, we've heard from a specific group, but we haven't been able to reach out really on a regular basis to others and ask them, is this the view of the whole investment community here? You know, are there other views? Can you make sure that we want to make sure that we're hearing the range of views, because without that dialogue, it's hard for us to go out and ask for that input back very easily. So I think that this annual meeting that we're describing between the senior management and one of our board members, it would be very helpful to develop a dialogue to understand the issues on a regular basis and also to get more feedback from the investment community that doesn't speak up to us on a regular basis. And part of that is, so we're asking for more systematic meetings with management. We're also asking that management internally supports their organization speaking to us. So another example is we have one of the buy-side organizations that we speak to, we have spoken to one person there quite a bit, but he's doing that of his own accord, and I think he got had in his performance review, he was told that he's spending too much time talking to the ISB. And so it wasn't seen as very productive, or it was almost seen as career limiting for this poor guy. And so we don't want that to be the case. So we want the organizations to support talking to us internally. We're not saying that these analysts or portfolio managers have to spend outrageous amounts of time speaking to us, but if they do want to take the time to talk to us, we are hoping that the organization sees that as an advantage and, you know, part of being a responsible investor. So we're asking them to consider doing this internally as supporting speaking with us. And as we continue to speak to these organizations, we're hoping that we'll encourage other organizations, again, this is the buy side, to speak to us more often, and hopefully, well, it'll also hopefully maybe take some of the fear away of speaking to accountants as we talk to them on a more regular basis. But I said that this is a value proposition. So the other side to this is that we are also going out and saying to them, look, we understand that we can't always ask you for everything, and we want to give you more education about the standards that we've already issued, education about how the standards that we're proposing to change will affect your work. And we're doing this, again, through people like Fred Nieto, our investor education manager, who is a former equities analyst. And so he has he's more familiar with speaking to the investment community. He is developing these materials, education materials, such as the webcast, to go out and talk to these organizations and make them feel more comfortable speaking to us. In some situations, we're happy to go out and speak to them on an education basis first without having any other input on our projects. For example, I think Ian had some meetings in India with the CFA, Institute of India, a couple months ago, and when I reached out to them to ask them if they'd be happy to work with us going forward, they said they would really like to start on the education side and look at our education materials first and become more familiar with IFRS from that perspective because they're new to adopting IFRS. But we need to make sure that those materials are investor-focused. And so that's the other side that we're offering to the investment community. And we're offering to come out and speak to them, to their analysts, on projects that they are concerned about or issues they're concerned about. And we're trying to make this a very, whatever anyone needs right now, we'll try to do until we have a more structured process in place. So this is the main. These are the main things I wanted to share with you. Oh, the other side to that is that we're continuing, or we're increasing our staff and our board education on the investment community. And so, again, Fred is trying to develop a program internally that he goes to the staff and during our lunch sessions, what we call our professional development sessions, and talks to them about perhaps models that the analysts might be using in their investment approach, or what the buy side is versus the sell side. Or we'll have someone come in from one of our contacts, or maybe a member of our CMAC, our Capital Markets Advisory Committee, and speak about the work that they do, either, for example, maybe they do fundamental analysis or other things that they're looking at when they look at companies, and just trying to get this more integrated into the organizations so that we feel more comfortable having these dialogues. So with respect to what we've been doing, I'd like to know if any of the council has any questions on our strategy and how we're implementing it so far, and also any suggestions or comments on things we should be considering in the future as part of activities.
Okay, there are a number of questions obviously coming up. I'm going to actually start with one. You don't mention advisory council members in here at all, Barbara.
I was trying to see if you were paying attention.
And obviously we have changed our, or the trustees have changed our terms of reference in terms of our secondary objective around communicate, if you like, education, that it's a role of educating and communicating, etc. And I wonder if there is, and certainly as others speak, interested in whether there are ways of using advisory council members, not just those that are investors, in terms of being in the different regions through their organisations for either introductions or, for instance, to distribute the investor newsletter, get it in front of people that they're aware of, so that there is more awareness through that mechanism.
Thank you for mentioning that. I have to admit that I haven't been very good at using the advisory council, and that's something I need your help with in terms of how I should do it better. Our investor subcommittee has been very helpful, and I've been trying to talk to them more directly, and I've had conversations one-on-one with the members on how to use them better. But I take your point, and I think that that's something that I need your help with, telling me how I might be able to use you better, so thank you.
And so I encourage all of us to think about how we could, in our own, and perhaps feed back any comments either direct to Barbara or through me, as to how you think we might actually be able to assist in this program. Having said that, let's go and take some questions. And I have no idea what to order, so at the moment I'm just going to go round what was here. So I'm going to start with you, Gavin.
Thank you, Barbara. I guess a couple of questions from me. One, you obviously have limited resource, and this task could be as big as you want to make it. So I guess what I'm curious is, how do you go about measuring the effectiveness of the effort you're putting in? I mean, the reality is, you know, there is a whole bunch of very different buy-side, sell-side folk you could be talking to. I think the reality is, like in most fields, there are some thought leaders. So I'd be interested to know how you measure effectiveness. And question number two, specifically on IFRS 9, be interested to know what plans you have around IFRS 9 and investor engagement, particularly given the effective date is 2018, but there clearly is some sell-side interest now.
Thank you, Gavin, for your questions. I think the effectiveness measurement question is a good question. That was something we had discussed at the beginning when we were developing the strategy, how we're going to figure out if we're doing a good job. I mean, in terms of kind of like numbers, we have set up a Google Analytics just to see when we send out the newsletter if there's an increase in hits to the web page that we have. But that's not the only way we should be measuring it, and I'm still trying to figure out how I should be measuring it. You know, for me, in terms of reaction, but more, whenever I reach out to investors, if I have a faster reaction or more interest in talking to me, I find that to be a good measure of effectiveness, but that's not something that's easy to quantify or to show or to display. So I think that we have to, I think we need to consider that as we move forward. We will, in terms of the resource comment that you made, we will, so we're looking to hire someone to help me pretty much doing what I'm doing, so they'll be working directly with me, and then I think if, you know, as this takes off, we'll have to talk again about the resources that we have. But for the time being, we have to think about how to measure the effectiveness and probably report it back. And I think, did you want to say something about the effectiveness, Mary?
Yes, just on that part, Kevin, it's not quite measuring effectiveness, but I think what Barbara described at the beginning about the change in approach from kind of talking to those who approach us or are easy to find, shifting from that to having stepped back and saying, okay, how can we go through and identify those investors with the largest non-U.S. Portfolios and targeting them? It's kind of a turnaround. It isn't quite effectiveness, but when you ask, how do you know that you're getting to the right people, it's turning it the other way and saying, how are we trying to target the right people? And as Barbara said, it's starting with the metrics of how large is their non-U.S. portfolio, what's their assessment of the type of investor they are, and then certainly a qualitative, you know, think back to materiality discussions, a qualitative overlay of are they vocal, influential, active in, let's say, corporate governance areas are kind of the three ways that the target population was identified. If having done that and tried to tap some of Barbara's network, if you have any of the advisory council members have specific organizations that you think we should be trying to target who might not show up on those metrics, I think probably good to hear it.
Well, I was going to say that is obviously an area where some council members might be able to help as well. I mean, I have 35 analysts that follow HSBC, but, you know, those 35, there's probably a handful that I think are interested and are thought leaders in financial reporting, and I'm sure other council members would have similar thoughts and views as well.
Thank you.
I do think, though, and I will say this, that, I mean, there is the old adage that you can't manage what you don't measure. I can't remember the exact phrase, but effectively coming back to Gavin saying, how do you know you're effective? You know, and you could, you know, what resources you could just add them to it, and it's saying, okay, what are the outcomes we're trying to, you know, what are the measurements to say we have been effective in this? And it's not just necessarily that we talk to the big people. It's, well, that's not an objective in itself. What's the purpose of talking to them, and how do you get there?
I just wanted to add that from a resources perspective, it is a very, very important project that Barbara's undertaking. We've allocated resources more than in the past, and we certainly intend to allocate more. So that's another measurement of not the effectiveness, but at least the seriousness of intentions that we have. But I also think that the effectiveness is measured internally by the visibility of Barbara's work in the technical team's work, the incorporation of her work and her interactions with the project's materials. And I think we're definitely seeing an increase in the attention that the board and the staff are giving to the input that we're receiving. So it's also an internal cultural change that could indicate to the effectiveness of this work.
I just respond to Gavin's second question really fast. For IFRS 9, so Gavin, we are starting to develop slides that are investor analyst focused, you know, on the other side of IFRS 9, so that we can start offering them to our contacts, come out and talk to them about how IFRS 9 will affect their work.
So once again, that might be a place you do want to approach council members. I mean, I have a number of questions from analysts, for example, on IFRS 9. I'm sure other folk do as well, to help ensure effectiveness.
We'll make sure that we
I think it's in our mutual interest.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for offering up your analysts for feedback. So we will definitely come to you.
Anister.
Okay, in general, preparers meet a lot of investors. I mean, any CFO of a given company, I'm sure, meets more than 200, 300 investors a year. And basically what we find out is that all the investors tend to respond when it's too late. I mean, they don't want to enter into the debate. Maybe they don't have the skills, but in any case, they are very interested. But they are interested when, I mean, the outcome is pretty much final, and they have to change their numbers or react. So, I mean, what I found out is that if companies, when the standard is pre-advanced, work out numbers, how they impact, and so they can prompt reaction from some analysts. And basically, because what has happened is some that we've met that would have made comments thought it was too late and it would have no influence, right? So, I mean, I would try to encourage preparers to, when there's any major standard, to try and assess the impacts beforehand, because otherwise it's just a de facto reaction and there's not possibility of input.
Jake, no. Surya.
Thank you. I was just going to pick on Ernesto's point and broaden it a little bit. We do go on a lot of roadshows that are organized by the investing community, and typically every major investment bank, I'll name a few, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, Bank of America, or if you want regional ones like EFG Hermes, they have periodic roadshows that are regional, global. And if you can link in with them, rating agencies do get linked in with them, so you can get a lunchtime slot or a breakfast slot. Not only do you get their analysts, you'd also get every other analyst who is in town with these other companies. And Gavin, I'd plug for you. I particularly like the HSBC conference for Middle East and CEMEA. They have a fantastic venue at the Four Seasons Palace in Istanbul.
Excuse me, Surya, this isn't supposed to be an advertorial.
No, it's a beautiful venue if you've been to the Chiragan Palace in Istanbul. But more importantly, Barbara, I do know, and I'm sure between Gavin, Rudolph, we know the people who run these conferences. Typically, they are headquartered in London, New York, Hong Kong, Singapore, and once you're in touch with them, you'll get a very large community because hundreds of people come to these.
And I think, Barbara, what you've just got there, you've just had three preparers who, you know, you've been talking to the investors, and it strikes me that actually it's the preparers who've got those links, that therefore some conversations with them would be very, very useful to get some ideas.
Yes, thank you.
Lotta.
Yeah, thank you. Well, firstly, this idea of using conferences as a platform, I think, is a very good one. And you could even start in London, because there are lots of conferences in London to which a lot of international people come, just as a starting point to save costs, even though you don't reach necessarily overseas investors that much in that first step. But what I was originally going to say is, well, firstly, I very strongly support your whole process there of forming a network of individual contacts at decision makers level. It's a tedious process, it's a long-term process, it can be, takes time, can be frustrating, but that's really what, in my view, you have to continue to develop the decision makers at the investors, at the asset managers, and partly at the brokers level. And this example you gave of one guy from a bank interacting with ISB and then being reprimanded for it, this is not a strange, unusual case. I mean, that's what I would consider is probably the baseline if somebody spends too much time on this non-core activity. So you have to talk to the decision makers. You also, in my view, you have to get in, that was already touched upon, also before, let's say, an ED or something is put out, and in order to get responses of what is actually broken, in a sense, which we're trying to fix here, you have to have these relationships, because through the general outreach, you get only very kind of unstructured responses, I would imagine. So I think this is, to me, a very good way to go and to continue. There are two small specific remarks I had in terms of, you say you have, you're using a database of non-US equities volume under management, which is a good starting point. I would add, in view of the definition of the users which should be targeted, maybe some weighting of bond asset managers to maybe just a 10% weighting or whatever, but not cut them out entirely, I would think. And the other thing was, in terms of incentives, you say it's successful and you have a positive reaction when you say you help in educating the investors, the analysts, and so on. Which is okay, but I think you have to be careful, obviously, because if you become a free accounting school, then the resources will quickly be overextended. To me personally, I would think the key incentive really is for the investors to be able to influence the shape of the accounting rules, and I think that's the first thing I would try to bring across and say, hey, wait a minute, you depend on, at least to some degree, on how the companies report, and you can have an influence on that. I'm not sure if enough people are aware of that, and you know, that should be the first incentive, and that doesn't cost anything. Okay.
Thank you. And Fumio?
Yes, thank you. So I think the engagement of the investors is very important, also the preparer to supply the better financial information. So I agree this engagement strategies. On the other hand, we need to consider that the investors often don't have the much information about the cost, how much companies spend for the preparing the financial report. So benefit of the investors' engagement versus the cost, preparers' cost, need to be well balanced. Thank you.
Very valid point, yes. Jake.
Thank you. Just an observation, really. I think everything you're doing here is very good. It's very important. I agree we have to have engagement with investors. The question I was left with was, do we really understand what the barriers to engagement are and how these different programs are actually addressing those barriers? I guess there's a point here around effectiveness. Which of these programs is most effective at breaking down those barriers? And I'm sort of left with a thought around whether our one-size-fits-all approach to getting comments actually back on discussion papers, EDs, etc., is the right thing to do. So we're faced with a large document with the same list of questions no matter who we are, and is there some high-level principles that we should be asking investors about with a simplified form of responding? Is that one of the barriers, and would that be a way forward? Don't know.
Thank you. We have talked. I have talked to the teams about, well, in terms of the questions in the documents, considering some investor-specific questions as well, or something that might be more focused for them, so that they could feel more comfortable responding. I do think that the comment letter, a formal written comment letter, is still a barrier to the process for the investment community, and I don't know if it's one that we would overcome very easily for certain reasons, like client, there's a conflict. Could be a conflict between their clients, like on the asset manager side, but. Because of those types of barriers, if that is one of the barriers, then when we go out and we're speaking to the community, we do summarize the discussions we've had. Obviously, they're not going to be attributed. But we also have we're doing something else on at the same time that I will come back to the advisory council with if it ends up taking off, that would be more transparent in terms of who we speak to on our standards for the buy side. So we're hoping that might encourage others to participate as well as reducing one of the barriers to speaking with us. And there was another thing I was going to tell you about what is most effective, and I forgot. But, I know the other thing we hear a lot from investors is that they don't know how the board has taken their views into consideration. So we're trying to be more clear to the extent we can on feeding kind of doing a feedback loop. And I find that some of the investors, that's kind of what all they wanted, was to hear what the board decided, and, you know, if they didn't decide to do what the investors wanted, why? I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not always so simple to do. So that's one of the things I think is effective to getting the investors at least on board with speaking to us, because if they don't understand how anything's being used, then they're not even interested in speaking with us. But I appreciate your comments.
Anne.
I've had several discussions with Barbara regarding this investor outreach and the investor strategy, and I congratulate you, Barbara, with what you've come up with and the variety of measures. But I also sit back a little bit, and I ask myself a little bit to the extent, if investors are the main users of financial statements, do we not need a greater proportion of investor perspective on the technical staff? And that's just a question I will leave and raise for the IASB thinking, because I don't know what the proportion is now. So just perhaps if that's, I'll leave it with you.
Thank you,
Thanks, Anne. Isabel.
Thank you. I don't know if it's so much for Barbara as for the organization as a whole. I was reacting to the comment of the investors not really knowing what is done with their input. I think the same goes for all the other constituents, actually not knowing how, you know, that is being dealt with, because obviously this is a less transparent process as the, you know, formal consultation and the comment letters coming out. And that's why I actually think the proposals of going through the preparers and asking them, you know, who their users are, and talking with them, but then afterwards, how do you feed it back? So I could see, for instance, that on specific topics, if you have the GPF meeting, you actually do feed back what the users have said on specific issues and what their particular users have said on specific issues. I think that would enhance the transparency of the whole process.
Isabel, I can say that in Mexico last week, at the DPOC meeting, there was this very discussion about how do you actually synthesize, given that there are so many ways of liaising now, and how does it become transparent. And I think I'm right in saying, David, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that basically it ended up that the staff are to go back to the DPOC, so the Due Process Oversight Committee, on basically how the board does make it more transparent as to those kind of consultations and how to summarise it. Have I got it right? He's nodding, so I think I have. Thomas?
Well, it's on the same line as Isabel's, basically. I mean, we shouldn't get out of this framework of due process. So what from my side would be very important is that feedback is one of the crucial things. But, I mean, everybody should be aware that what investors think. So they should get their things together. If they want to have some input, some comment, then that should be transparent as well. I mean, it's difficult to get their information and their opinion. But at the end, I mean, to get a good due process procedure, they have probably to write something, and probably that is probably the difficult thing to put them to the writing. But I think that is essential for the whole process. Getting them to think about a standard is already a step, I think, which is very important. But at the end, they have to get the things together and put a position on the table.
And I think that links very much to that same DPOC discussion and how to that. To get that information if they really won't write, but we do get the input in through a different mechanism and how we make that transparent. Okay, I'm going to sum up there, Barbara. I think and hope you've got some valuable information. I think it was great to get an update. I think there was no doubt that everybody, you know, in terms of the advice from this council would be continue on with the program. And I think that, you know, there are things that we can do and in relation to that, so I think just working through that, and I think I would be right in saying, council members, for us to continue to be engaged in this topic, because I think it is something that we can continue to give advice on. Thank you very much.